The Most Special Beast by Beep Beep San. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Part 1. Chapter 1. The Search. They found him less than 2 years after his first death. One moment Yusuf was bartering with a merchant for a new water skin. The next he turned around and came face to face with the women of his dreams. Neither of them looked surprised. The one with the bow grinned at him like she knew him already, and the one with the axe ordered him to follow them. He found himself obeying, without question. They took him back to the room where they were staying, and then the three of them talked for hours. They prodded Yusuf into telling his life story, but when he tried to ask for the same, they just laughed and said their life stories would take years to tell. By the time Yusuf ran out of questions, for the time being, night had long since fallen. The women broke out some food and invited him to share a late meal. "So," the one named Andromache said through a mouthful of bread, "do you know where the other one is?" Head still spinning with all the new information, and giddy with the relief at not being alone in this strange new world, Yusuf took a minute to register her words. When he did, he tilted his head and frowned. "The other one?" Quinn flapped a hand at him. "You know, the one who died with you." Yusuf looked down at the piece of dried fruit in his hands as though it would explain things. When it didn't, he looked back up and said eloquently, "What?" They exchanged glances. "There was another," Andromache said, setting down her bread. "We dreamed of you both." "You were each other's first deaths," Quinn added solemnly. Then she winked. "What a beginning, hmm?" Yusuf gaped at them. "Him? He... are you saying he's like you? Like us?" "Yes," Andromache frowned thoughtfully. "Two at one time hasn't happened before. We were very curious."
"I haven't dreamed of him," Yusuf said. "It might have been a lie. Occasionally he dreamed of his first death on that cursed battlefield. He dreamed of the signs of the world slipping away from his dimming senses, a solid body beneath him as he lay choking on his last breaths, the sharp pain in his neck, bright eyes burning into him. But the women told him they dreamed of what Yusuf was doing in the present. They saw him in markets many times and often traveling. They knew he liked to draw when he had the time and paper, and, embarrassingly, they saw that time when Yusuf tried to rescue a stray cat from a rooftop, only to fall and break his neck. None of Yusuf's dreams of the man were like this, only memories. He had, however, dreamed of the women. At the time, he thought them some strange figment of his imagination. Two warrior women as fierce as the desert and as unyielding as the sea, riding, fighting, kissing by a fire. They were good dreams, usually, free and wild and content. "We dreamed of you both," Quinn told him. "It's how we found you. Andromache recognized the market you were in last month, the one with the courtyard with all those engraved benches. We tracked you from there." "Then why not track him down the same way?" Yusuf asked. Quinn scowled. "We stopped dreaming of him half a year ago." "Why?" Andromache leaned over to steal the bread Yusuf had abandoned. "Mirzafan," she said darkly. "There was a real shit show going down there. We actually found out about it from our dreams of him, and we were already close by, so we went." "But then we got caught up in the fighting," Quinn said, stealing the bread from Andromache in turn. "We must have run into him at some point there without knowing. And now?" She spread her hands, one cheek bulging with bread. "No way to find him again." "Why do you want to?" Yusuf grumbled, not thrilled by the thought of meeting his killer again. Quinn rolled her eyes. "We wanted to find you too, didn't we? We belong together." "I do not belong with a Frankish invader," Yusuf protested hotly, "and I would hope neither of you do either." Andromache shrugged. I guess we will have to wait and see. She examined him for a long moment, her eyes piercing through him uncomfortably. Do you want to know what we dreamed of him? I don't suppose he gave up and went home, Yusuf said sourly. No, Andromache said. She pursed her lips. You know, we saw more of the battle after your deaths. We saw you fighting, trying to help people escape, and eventually fleeing the city when hope was lost. Yusuf closed his eyes, not wanting to remember. And what did you see him doing? He asked resignedly. Murdering innocents? Setting fires? Sleeping like a baby on stolen land? No. He opened his eyes again to find the women exchanging a silent conversation with each other. Quinn turned back to him to continue the story. We saw him weep, she said simply. We saw him pray over the bodies of children. He tried to stop his comrades from killing a young family, and even killed some of the soldiers before dying again. Eventually, he was run out of the city. Yusuf shook his head in disbelief. An invader having such a change of heart? The one who had looked at Yusuf with such blazing determination, so desperate to see Yusuf die? I find that hard to believe. Believe what you want, Andromache said carelessly. What did he do after that? Yusuf asked, curious despite himself. Quinn shrugged. The same sorts of things you did. He traveled, died in the desert a few times, helped some people. Got run out of more towns, Andromache added dryly. He obviously can't speak any of the local languages, and he sticks out like a sore thumb. Thinking of that sunburnt skin and those light-colored eyes, Yusuf grunts in agreement. We aren't asking you to like him, Quinn said frankly after a few moments, or trust him, but we do need to find him, if only to keep tabs. Will you come with us? Andromache asked. She said it like she didn't care one way or another. Yusuf didn't have to think about it for long. He had long since realized his old life was gone, and he had nothing better to do. There was much to learn from these women, besides, and perhaps most importantly, Yusuf was lonely. Yes, he said, something in his chest lightening at the thought of having company again. I will come with you. Yusuf offered them both a smile. And if we find the invader, I won't even kill him before introductions. They laughed and raised their cups at him in a toast. Chapter 2. A Lead. There is no urgency in finding their fourth member. They wander vaguely westwards, following the last known direction of the missing man. We think he might be heading home, Quinn had remarked when they first set out together. Yusuf considered saying something about invading the invader's homeland, but in the end he kept his bitter thoughts to himself. He didn't know Quinn or Andromache very well yet. The three of them ride from village to town to city, taking on odd jobs to grow their coin and sparring around their campfires. Yusuf quickly discovers he is exceedingly outmatched by the women. He tries to be graceful in his defeat, and Quinn at least doesn't usually rub it in too much. As they travel, they tell him stories of the places they've been and the things they've seen. Yusuf sketches their bodies in movement as they fight each other, and he gets back at Andromache's brutal lessons by reciting the most florid poetry he knows. Before he realizes it, they've been traveling together for months. It feels like he's known the women for years. He feels more settled, safe in their shared gift and their mutual lack of an explanation for it. The women still enjoy the little things in life, easing Yusuf's fears that being long-lived would only ever be wearisome. They've crossed many lands and gone more places than he'd ever been before, and still they have seen no sign of the other man. The women don't seem bothered by it. They measure time differently and think in terms of inevitabilities. Someday they will find the man again, the women believe, and they don't worry too much about whether it will be next month or next century. Yusuf, still young, doesn't yet comprehend that perspective, but he also doesn't especially want to find his killer, so it doesn't bother him very much either. In the end, the three of them stumble across their first lead entirely by accident. While lazily asking around about jobs in the area one day,
Yusuf overhears some talk about local prize fighting. Men fight in the arena for rewards, he learns, rising in the ranks and competing for the title of champion. It's too risky for them, Yusuf knows. They can't intentionally sign up for one-on-one fighting in front of an audience. He asks for the details anyway. He isn't ready to move on from this city yet, tired of sleeping on the ground, and some interesting fights could help him coax Andromache and Quinn into staying for a while longer. Besides, he finally managed to wheedle them into wearing the latest fashion of the region, and it would be nice to attend an event to show off their new attire. They watch their first fights the next day. The fights are held in an outdoor space ringed with raised walls and seats in surrounding rows above. An employee takes one look at their dress and shows them to a prime spot with an excellent view. The women spend the entire time buying drink after drink and loudly criticizing the fighter's technique to Yusuf's amusement and embarrassment. They seem to enjoy themselves. They are politely stopped at the gate on their way out by the same employee who seated them. The employee bows respectfully in a direction behind them. "I hear you were not impressed," says the large man approaching them with a half smile. He looks like he used to be strongly built, but with years of pampered living, having turned his muscles into fat, his clothes look new and expensive. "Emil," he introduces himself. "I run the arena." Eyebrows raised, he asked, "I take it my champion was not up to your standards." Quinn opens her mouth, but Yusuf beats her to it. "The fighting was well done, just in a style different from what we are used to," he says diplomatically. Emil waves his hand. "No offense taken," he says, and he gestures towards the gate. "Would you care to join me for a drink? I admit I am curious to hear of your usual fighting style." Andromache agrees for them all, no doubt sold when he mentioned alcohol. They end up in a higher-end tavern, where Yusuf has to employ all his silver-tongued skills to weave tales for Emil's enjoyment. The man seems to be under the impression that they are people of some importance back wherever they come from, and Yusuf sees no need to dissuade him from that idea. He talks, and Emil and the women keep the drinks flowing. "Well," declares Emil, after Yusuf's latest exaggeration wraps up, "I hope one day to witness such unusual combat. Perhaps I might persuade a visitor to fight in my arena." He raises his eyebrows hopefully at Yusuf. "Have you had many visiting fighters?" Yusuf asks, ignoring the man's less than subtle suggestion. He imagines lone warriors roaming from town to town looking for a fight. He can easily picture Andromache doing just that. "Some." Emil wobbles his hand demonstratively, spilling half of his drink as he does. "Mostly not." He takes a long gulp, emptying his cup. Then his eyes light up. "Oh, I did have an unusual one for a while." Andromache gestures to order another round and asks idly, "How so?" Emil sighs, almost dreamily. "He was special. Helped me build up the arena." He waves his empty cup. "It's fairly new, you know. I built the whole system up from scratch." Yusuf hums in response, for lack of anything better to say. He wonders if they shouldn't order some food. None of them seem to be in a rush to leave. Emil absentmindedly accepts a fresh cup from a harried server. "He was my first champion," he continues. "Unbeaten. The reputation. It brought new fighters and crowds. And then my business was set." Quinn raises an eyebrow. "Good fighter, then?" "He was good," Emil agrees, leaning forward and trying to tap his nose with his finger. He misses. "But that wasn't what made him the champion." "What did?" "I suppose I can tell you it's long over now." Emil looks around at them with a conspiratorial smile. "He never suffered a wound," he says, lowering his voice. "He could take anything and get back up, and I always had my champion to fight another fight." Not seeming to notice how his companions have frozen in place, Emil frowns in recollection. "I had to get rid of him once the arena got popular, of course. Wouldn't do to keep a champion around who couldn't be beaten." "Do you know where he went next?" Andromache asks, setting her cup down, still full, her eyes intent on Emil. He laughs. "Of course I do. I sold him, didn't I?" Yusuf chokes on his inhale. "What?" he coughs. Emil pats him on the back. I sold him. What gave you that right? Yusuf grits out, surprising himself with how deeply offended he is by the idea. He didn't expect to care about the invader's fate, but then some things no one deserves to suffer. Emil blinks at him, bewildered. I bought him from the jail. He was scheduled for execution, you know. Can't remember what for. Quinn leans forward to catch his attention. Who did you sell him to? An old friend of mine, Emil says, pausing to sip his drink as Quinn taps her nails on the table impatiently. Lord Gabor. He has an interest in special things. Special things, Yusuf repeats flatly. Emil nods. I couldn't reveal his abilities, not when I was trying to build up the arena. It would have been cheating to have a champion who could heal from any wound. He would have been killed for it too, and possibly me as well, for the magic. No, too dangerous. But Gabor? He smirks, a lazy smile that makes Yusuf sick to his stomach. Gabor was very interested in exploring the limits of those abilities. Chapter 3. The Plan. The tension in their shared room that night is thick enough to cut through. Despite their best efforts, Emil didn't give them much more of use, only repeating the same vague implications and winks. Andromache and Quinn sobered up fast as they questioned him. Emil only got drunker. He was eager to please, no doubt thinking himself socializing with foreign nobles, but the man clearly knew little about what happened after the man had left the arena for good. They left him in the capable hands of a resigned arena employee and returned to their inn without a word spoken between them. Now the storm clouds gathering over their heads fill their room in the inn until Yusuf feels he will choke on it. Andromache is the first to speak. We leave immediately. You want to go after him? Yusuf asks. She doesn't bother to respond verbally, only shooting him an incredulous look. What? I didn't mean to imply you shouldn't, Yusuf says, fumbling with his words. But the man didn't just buy him earlier today. He's been gone for some time. All the more time he has spent in captivity, Quinn says darkly. She gestures sharply to Yusuf's side of the room, ordering, Pack. Andromache raises a challenging eyebrow. If you're coming, that is. Yes, I'm coming, Yusuf sputters, still taken aback by their urgency. They haven't even met the man, not like Yusuf did. And what a disaster of a meeting that had been. He is not eager to make their second acquaintance, but the women have none of his hesitations. Unflappable and certain of their visions of a changed man, Yusuf knows they will leave him behind if he moves too slowly. Have you ever heard of Lord Gabor? Yusuf asks as he begins shoving clothes into his saddlebags. No, Quinn says, looking grim. But if he bought a magically healing man to test his abilities, I can't imagine there's anything good about him. We'll get him back, Andromache promises lowly. If they were in a larger room, Yusuf has no doubt she would be swinging her axe, the weapon splitting the very air with the humming whir. Instead, she wields only a fearsome scowl. They have warned him before of capture. So far, Yusuf has thankfully not been caught out. Not by anyone who survived for very long afterwards, anyway. He isn't counting the thieves in the night who stared aghast as his guts returned to his belly moments before they died on his blade. People are cruel, and they fear what they do not understand, Andromache told him one night over the campfire. Quinn had just finished a chilling tale of her multiple executions, increasingly creative, at the hands of some townspeople a few hundred years ago. No one can ever find out about us. It never ends well. And now, their fourth member has been specially acquired by someone interested in their gift. He was bought. How long ago did Emil say he sold him? Yusuf asks, tripping over that hateful word. He didn't, Quinn says. It was too hard getting details out of him. The man was pickled. Like you weren't, Yusuf scoffs under his breath. Quinn hears, and she leans over to smack the back of his head. It doesn't change anything, Andromache says, we track down Gabor. If he isn't there anymore, we'll at least get our next lead. Let's go, then, Quinn jumps up. He's a lord, Yusuf reminds them hastily. We can't go in without planning. We can't take on all his men without even knowing if the invader is there or not. Quinn sits back down with a glare. Then you had better figure something out quickly. He sighs and pinches the bridge of his nose. He can't get headaches anymore, but if he could, one would be building right about now. We need some sort of reputability if we're going to get close. That or get hired on as his servants, I suppose, but that could take a while. We do whatever's fastest, Andromache says, and least likely to end up with all of us in chains. She nods decisively and starts giving orders. Yusuf, you find us a way in. I don't care what you have to do. And Quinn, you find out where we're going and ready the horses. What will you be doing? Yusuf asks as Quinn starts heading for the door, not wasting any time. Andromache's eyes flash cold. I'll be sharpening my axe. Chapter 4. The Beast. Gabor's castle is disgustingly ostentatious. Its decor reeks of a wealthy person with absolutely no taste. Or rather, with too many tastes. The architecture is a haphazard mishmash of styles from lands far apart. Apparently, Gabor's interest in special things is not limited to immortality. Even the haze of approaching dusk fails to soften the castle's painful visage. Yusuf has yet to master Andromache's unreadable face or Quinn's neutral expression, so he just makes a point to avoid looking at anything for longer than necessary. He can't afford to insult their host with an ill-timed look of horror. Eyes cast down as they ride into the courtyard, Yusuf notes that the guard's boots are dirty but not very worn. It's a good sign, he thinks. It means they lack both discipline and experience. Far outnumbered, the three of them will have to take every advantage they can get if push comes to shove. When a guard with a ridiculously plumed helmet, look away, Yusuf tells himself, steps forward. Quinn hands down their token and letter of introduction from Emil. Yusuf tenses. The token is real, stolen from Emil's chambers. The seal on the letter is also legitimate. But Yusuf had penned the words himself. Emil barely knew them, and they needed a much more trustworthy introduction than the man would have been willing to give. The guard skims the letter and examines the token before dipping his head to them in a casual sign of respect. Yusuf hides a sigh of relief. Thankfully, the city where Emil runs his arena is a couple weeks' ride away. They should be long gone by then, far before anyone could report back on the letter's authenticity. "Welcome to Castle Simoleon," the guard says in a nasal voice. Yusuf focuses on the man's quivering mustache instead of his helmet. "Lord Gabor will be pleased to host the esteemed lord and ladies, particularly friends of Emil. We will stable your horses, if you would follow me to the great hall." The three of them dismount, Andromache and Quinn ignoring the hastily proffered hands of two more guards. Yusuf spares a moment to hope Lord Gabor will not belittle the women. He doesn't think the two of them will tolerate such a thing today, even if they are on a mission. They enter the castle and wind their way to the great hall. Tables and cabinets clutter the walls, covered in strange objects and treasures of all kinds, golden idols, bizarre and unsettling paintings, an intricate robe with a hole in its breast. And is that a human skull? Yusuf fails to keep his eyes to himself, bewildered by the array. What in the world are all these things for? The decor does not improve. By the time they draw to a halt, Yusuf's eyes hurt from all the clashing colors and unnecessary gold accents. As their guide loudly announces them, "May I present the Lady Andromeda of Halcyus and her companions from the east, Lord Joseph and Lady Quinifer, allies of Emil who have traveled far." Yusuf takes a few moments to look around. He ignores Andromache hissing to Quinn. "I still cannot believe you went with Quinifer." To his surprise, the great hall is not quite as bad as the hallways, or perhaps the scale of it simply minimizes the effect. The ceiling swoops away from them, and the walls are filled with tapestries of brilliant, if not matching, colors. Long, darkly wooded tables stretch out along half the floor, presumably leaving the other half open for performances or dancing. At the far end is a raised platform with a table placed perpendicular to the rest. A handful of men and women sit around the table, goblets in hand and platters scattered before them. A dozen or so guards stand along the walls, vaguely at attention. Yusuf realizes with a jolt that their guide has stopped yelling in their ears, and Andromache and Quinn have already started across the floor. Yusuf hurries to follow, eyes still darting around to take everything in. As they draw near, he notices more people standing quietly behind the platform. Servants, given their position and their simpler clothing. The people at the table, on the other hand, are dripping in fine cloth. The man in the center of the table stands as they approach, raising a hand. "Greetings, friends," he says with a wide smile. Lord Gabor's voice is smooth and carries well, and his blonde beard is neatly trimmed. His embroidered clothes fit him like a second skin. A bejeweled dagger gleams on his hip, shiny and expensive to match. Interestingly, the sword at his other side is not nearly so fine. Its hilt is of good quality but undecorated, and the scabbard is plain and visibly worn, if well cared for. It seems Gabor is an experienced swordsman, dangerous despite the trappings of finery. Yusuf hates him immediately. "I am pleased to make the acquaintance of such esteemed persons as yourselves," Gabor continues. "Please sit." He gestures to the far end of his table, and three of his servants immediately move forward to pull out the empty chairs there. "We thank you for your hospitality and apologize for interrupting your dinner," Quinn says politely, her court face firmly in place. "We have traveled a long way." "Indeed, you must have," Gabor says admiringly, his eyes trailing over Quinn and Yusuf a bit too long. He retakes his seat, snapping his fingers. "Refreshments for my guests," he orders without looking around. A pair of servants split off from the rest and slip out of the room. Yusuf settles into his chair, glad to be seated on something that isn't a horse for the first time in a fortnight. He eyes the other guests at the table as they curiously eye him back. "Allow me to make introductions," Gabor says, and then he launches into a series of names and titles and relations that Yusuf does not even bother to listen to. He half-heartedly hopes Andromache or Quinn is paying attention. He doubts it. Refreshments arrive just as Gabor finishes, or perhaps the servants knew to time their entrance this way. A few minutes go by as the three of them receive plates and glasses, and everyone at the table receives a refill. Andromache neatly downs her wine goblet in one go, and Yusuf is tempted to do the same. Once they are settled and introduced, conversation resumes amidst the guests. They are talking about some petty dispute over land a few days' ride away, nothing of import. Letting the conversation float over his head, Yusuf takes some time to evaluate the people at the table, gauging their attitude and threat levels. So far, they all seem pleasant enough, if lacking substance. The lord and lady sat closest to Yusuf are laughing at everything Gabor says. The man at the other end of the table seems incapable of speaking a full sentence without repeating himself. None of them look like warriors, or even hard workers, and neither do they carry the quiet assuredness common to the well-respected leaders Yusuf has had the chance to meet. "And what do you think, Lord Joseph?" Gabor asked suddenly, leaning forward in his seat. Yusuf forces a polite smile and demurs. "I cannot claim to know enough about the situation to venture advice, sir." Gabor takes his deflection with good humor. "Ah, smart man," he says with a laugh. "An intelligent man knows when to keep his thoughts to himself." Inclining his head in agreement, Yusuf wonders how they're going to bring up the delicate question that led them here. "I'm afraid I am a poor host. I have been neglecting my newest guests," Gabor says, turning his smile on them one by one. His gaze lingers on Quinn. "Tell me, from what lands do you hail? Lady Andromeda, you are not so terribly far from home as your companions." "No," Andromache agrees blandly. She offers nothing further. Yusuf curses her resistance to planning. He had wanted to concoct a waterproof origin story, but the women waved away his ideas, saying the best plans are the ones you make as you go. Too many details will catch you in a lie quicker, Andromache warned. But how, then, to evade Gabor's questioning? I am from far enough away that no one here has heard of my home, Quinn says, managing to sound charming instead of challenging. Oh? Gabor raises his eyebrows. You know, I am somewhat of an expert in faraway lands. My halls are filled with artifacts and priceless treasures. Perhaps I even have something from your homeland, Lady Quinifer. Her lips twist upwards in a polite smile. Perhaps you do, sir. Gabor opens his mouth, leaning in towards her, but one of his guests unwittingly interrupts. Lord Gabor has the most amazing things here, the man. Kirsto, Yusuf thinks, gushes from the other end of the table. From places I have never heard of. He gestures excitedly with his goblet. My lord, you were just saying, were you not, that you wear one such item on your person? Indeed, Gabor says, aiming a tight smile back at the man. He rises from his chair to draw his sword and hold it aloft, parallel to the ground, its flat side resting on his upturned palms as he displays it to the guests. It is not nearly the most exotic of my possessions, nor among the most beautiful, but it is one of my favorites to keep with me. I believe this blade comes from Naples. Yusuf hums, feigning interest as the other guests murmur appreciatively. Why is it a favorite? Andromache asks, eyeing the blade as though waiting for it to turn into something more exciting. It's a reminder, Gabor answers as he sheaths it again. He pauses to settle back in his chair, looking pleased as the room hangs on his words. Some things are even more dangerous when unarmed, but even the most dangerous of beasts can be defeated. Frowning, Yusuf mouths this line to himself as he tries to make sense of it. Gabor just loves to hear himself talk, doesn't he? Will you be making use of it during the festival, Lord? Kirsto asks eagerly. Festival? Quinn echoes lightly, another false smile curling at her lips. Do tell. Ah, Gabor says with delight, rubbing his hands together. Just a small occasion I am hosting in, what, 3 days now? How time flies. Do not let him fool you, another of the ladies. Carlotta? Jamila? Yusuf can't remember, chimes in. She leans in conspiratorially. The festival is the biggest event around here in ages. Everyone is very much looking forward to it. Gabor grins, smoothing down his heavily embroidered jacket as he pretends not to hear her. We rode nearly a week to get here, one of the men adds. Lord Gabor is kind enough to host those of us who have no relatives nearby with whom to stay. You know I would not turn you away, Gabor says. Not someone with such excellent taste as you. He winks at the man. Yusuf has no idea how to interpret the gesture in this context. In any case, we shall have a grand time, the likes of which even you have never seen, my esteemed guests from far away. Days of music and feasting, games and performances. What sort of games? Andromache asks, perking up as her competitive spirit overrides her interest in her goblet. Any fighting? Gabor pauses, eyebrows raising slightly before he recovers. Fond of the military arts, lady? He asks, eyes drifting to the axe on her back, as though seeing it for the first time. Neither Andromache nor Quinn had gone to any great effort to appear ladylike, and so far Gabor has taken it surprisingly in stride. There will be an archery competition and a swords tournament, yes, he says without waiting for an answer, as well as others which may not be as much to your tastes. Why do you say so? Quinn challenges, her tone sweet enough to cover the bluntness. What sort of events are these? Gabor spreads his hands, glancing around the table with a smirk. Well, not everyone shares the same interests, he says diplomatically, but most of my acquaintances are fond of a good dogfight or cockfight. Ah, Quinn says with a nod, neither confirming nor denying her own interest. But Yusuf sees the way Gabor glances towards the man he winked at earlier, the way that smirk lingers, and he thinks there is more to this. My companions, lovely as they are, he says, laying on the charm, are not afraid of a little blood, nor am I. In fact, He meets Gabor's eyes as he takes a long draught to prolong the anticipation, taking note of the considering look on the man's face. Sometimes it can even heighten the experience. Gabor's smile widens, and his eyes glitter unpleasantly. For the first time, Yusuf thinks he looks dangerous. "I see," Gabor says slowly. "In that case, sir, ladies, you may very well appreciate the special event." One of the ladies down the table claps her hands together excitedly. Yusuf decides to take a chance. "We did hear something from Emil that piqued our interest. I admit it was this that led us here." "Oh, yes, of course," Gabor says, all hesitation disappearing. "Friends of Emil, I should have known." He looks between the three of them for a moment, a calculating look flashing over his face before his smile returns. "Well, then, how about a sneak peek? Unless you think it will spoil the show." "We have not heard enough to spoil anything," Andromache says dryly. "Perhaps we are not even speaking of the same thing. I am half convinced Emil was too far into his cups when he told us the story." Gabor laughs good-naturedly and glances over at the closest guard. "Bring him in," he orders. The other guests murmur amongst themselves, their food and drink forgotten as their eyes follow the guard's path to the door behind the table. Yusuf's heart thumps in his chest. "Him," Gabor had said. So was Emil telling the truth? Did Gabor truly buy the man they had been searching for? Is their search finally over? He exchanges a look with Quinn, half anticipation and half concern. Andromache's eyes remain focused on the doorway. They wait. Gabor doesn't seem to mind spoiling the surprise further, however. A few minutes into their wait, he appears to tire of the hushed conversations on the other side of the table and leans back toward the three of them. "I got him from Emil, you know, perhaps a year ago now. An excellent addition to my collection," he brightens. "You must have seen some of it on your way in." "Yes," Yusuf says, scrambling for a compliment that will appease a madman. "You have an astounding selection." "Thank you," Gabor preens, though he glances down in false modesty. "You have not seen the best of it yet, though. It's my menagerie that truly astounds." "Oh," Yusuf manages. "Emil did not say." "Animals from the farthest corners of the world," Gabor boasts, swinging his arms wide enough to hit the servant refilling his goblet. He takes no notice. "Some monsters as well. Wait until you see my two-headed stag." Yusuf sends a wide-eyed look towards Andromache, wondering if she has ever seen the like. She just shrugs. "But this one," Gabor continues, in his element now, "this one is special. Especially special. Emil was making use of him, but he never saw the full potential." Yusuf tenses. He does not like where this is going. "Not like you do?" Quinn asks, leading Gabor on when Yusuf can't find any words. Gabor smiles, pleased. "I like to think so." "Ah," he says, setting down his goblet with a decisive thunk. "Here we are." The occupants of the table turn as one to the doorway, where the guard has reappeared. From the hallway beyond, Yusuf can hear the thudding of footsteps and a dull clanking noise, as well as a few low voices. "Is he cooperating?" Gabor asks the guard, now standing at attention beside the door. "No, my lord." Gabor's smile grows, as does Yusuf's unease. "Good." Then there are two more guards emerging from the doorway, trailing ropes wrapped around their gloved hands. They stop in their tracks, apparently meeting resistance on the other end. One of them curses under his breath. They tug hard together, and then a man stumbles through the doorway. The ropes lead to his wrists, cuffed together before him in iron. He's naked, and his skin is startlingly pale beneath a layer of grime, stretched thin over two prominent bones. His shaggy brown hair and wild beard cover most of his face, and the way he hangs his head hides the rest. Another yank on the ropes forces him to shuffle forward a few steps, drawing attention to his ankle cuffs linked by a short chain. He plants his bare feet. hunching his broad shoulders down and tucking his head in as he braces himself against the pull of the ropes. His lean muscles visibly tremble with the strain. "Come on," Gabor says sharply, startling Yusuf out of his staring. "Get him over here." Two more guards follow him out the door, both holding spears. They yell at the man like they're shooing a wild animal, prodding at him with the blunt end of their weapons. He doesn't move at first, but then one of the guards shoves at his shoulder hard enough to knock him off balance. The guards in front yank hard and move quickly, and finally the man stumbles forward in front of the raised platform. Yusuf finds himself gripping the arms of his chair hard enough to hurt. The other guests murmur excitedly, their words buzzing in his ears. The rear guards kick the man's knees from behind and shove down on his shoulders, forcing him to kneel. His knees hit the floor with a thud. The other two guards step back to either side. They keep tension on the ropes to prevent his arms from moving much, leaving his bound hands to hang limply before his crotch. "This," Gabor says grandly, gesturing to the man held in place on his floor, "is my most special monster." The man lifts his head. If Yusuf weren't already frozen in place from shock, this would pin him to his seat. Behind the greasy hair and the dirt, the man's eyes shine out from his face with a blazing fury aimed straight for Gabor. His gaze is bright, angry, and above all, familiar. Yusuf knows this man. He has killed this man before, and he has been killed by this man. It's him, the fourth living immortal. Oblivious to the world crashing in around Yusuf, Gabor is still talking. His smooth voice scratches at Yusuf's ears. "I know he isn't much to look at, but I promise you will be amazed," he says. From the corner of his eye, Yusuf can see Gabor smiling. He can't bring himself to look away, let alone smile politely back. "He can heal," says Gabor, almost proudly, "from anything." With a gesture of his hand, one of the spear-wielding guards steps forward and, without fanfare, stabs directly through the man's right bicep. It punches a grunt from the man and nearly does the same to Yusuf. He forces himself to remain still and quiet in his chair as the guard jerks his spear back out and blood spills out on either side of the man's arm. The man continues glaring at Gabor, who pays no attention. "You see?" he says excitedly, waving in his prisoner's direction. The flow of blood stops almost immediately, but the entry and exit wounds are difficult to see. Gabor seems to realize this. "Make a visible cut," he orders impatiently. This time the guard slashes a long line across the man's exposed chest, jagged enough to tear the skin up. The man jerks, but makes no sound. Blood wells up and streams down in bright lines. It stops in seconds. The other guests at the table ooh and ah, chattering excitedly to each other. They've seen this before, Yusuf thinks, tearing his gaze away to look at them all disbelievingly. They came here to attend Gabor's festival, but also to see this man, the special monster, in one of the events. Somehow Yusuf doesn't think it's going to be a painless occasion. He turns to look at Andromache, who is staring down at the man with an unreadable expression. Quinn catches his eye instead, reaching out discreetly to squeeze his hand beneath the table. "Wait," she murmurs in her native tongue, a language she's been teaching him lately. Then she smiles at something Gabor is saying, her face a perfect facade, broken only by the fire Yusuf can see in her eyes. When he returns his attention to the man kneeling on the floor, he finds the man looking back, their gazes lock. Yusuf loses himself in those brightly colored eyes, unable to look away. It feels as though all of the air is sucked out of the room. For a moment, he's back on the battlefield. He can distantly hear the screaming of men and horses, smell blood and shit, feel the sun beating down on him. The man stands before him in a crusader's armor with a long, straight sword and a determined expression. Yusuf is going to kill him. Yusuf is going to die. Then Gabor is standing, his chair scraping against the platform. Yusuf blinks, and the man is looking away. his gaze following Gabor as he descends to the floor. "He is an incredible specimen, really," Gabor is saying. "I do not know what he is, but his ability is truly remarkable. It allows us to have a great deal of entertainment." He directs his smile up at his guests, most of whom laugh agreeably. Yusuf hates them in that moment. A quiet creak draws his attention. Andromache is gripping her chair's armrest with bloodless fingers. "What do you do with him?" she asks calmly, as though she isn't really interested. As though her veins aren't burning with the desire to slam her axe into Gabor's neck. "Emile had him fighting in the gladiator rings. A good idea, but limiting, because he had to appear human," Gabor says, coming to a halt before the man. "Whereas me, with my collection and jurisdiction, well, I have the freedom to do whatever I want." The man stares up at Gabor with utter hatred, something much darker than the way he looked at Yusuf that fateful day. He tries to lunge forward, throwing himself up from his knees and drawing back his head in preparation for a blow, but his arms jerk back into his own abdomen as the rope snap tight and the guards behind him seize his shoulders and pull him back. A brief scuffle ensues. One guard clubs the man over the head, while another jabs a spear into his side. A rough noise erupts from the man's throat as he struggles, wordless, something furious and animalistic and desperate. The guards manage to beat the man back down to his knees. His chest heaves, but the blood spilling down his side has already stopped. Gabor doesn't seem annoyed by the interruption. His face lights as he watches his men subdue his prize prisoner. "You might be surprised just how intriguing it is to watch him heal," he muses, picking up where he left off. "To see his bones knit and his skin weave itself together." He draws his shiny dagger from his hip and slowly circles around behind the man. The man tries to turn his head to follow, but Gabor buries his free hand in the man's long hair and shoves him to face forwards again. "None of that," he clucks. His clenched fist pulls down and back, forcing the man to bare his throat. It's then that Yusuf finally notices the gag, or a muzzle, maybe. Some sort of leather and metal contraption is wrapped tightly around the lower half of the man's head, partially buried beneath the hair and beard. The man's mouth gapes open slightly, and Yusuf can see a glint of metal inside. He wants to be sick. "Andromache," he mutters, not knowing what he's asking. She hushes him under her breath, not even chastising him for using the wrong name. Yusuf clenches his fists. They can't subdue this many guards without giving themselves away, and with Gabor's sadistic interest, one thing is clear. They can't afford to let these people know of their secret. He has to sit here and watch. "We've put him in some of the dogfights," Gabor continues, idly tapping the flat of his dagger against the man's cheekbone. The man flinches at every touch as the point of the blade comes near his eye. "A bear fight once, that was interesting. A bit messy, but mostly my guests enjoy having some one-on-one time, up close and personal." Without another word, Gabor raises the dagger high and stabs it directly into the man's chest. The man cries out in pain, his eyes squeezing shut. It takes Gabor two tries to get the dagger back out, and Yusuf sits still and watches, feeling like a simmering pot about to boil. The man sways on his knees, blood pouring from the wound. Gabor keeps him upright with his grip in the mess of hair. "For the festival," he continues casually, as though he hasn't just struck a killing blow to a bound man, "I plan to bring in a few convicts serving out long sentences. They'll get a chance to go free, and we'll get some entertainment." He smiles and wiggles his bloody dagger in the air. "Would any of my new guests care to try?" To Yusuf's shock, Andromache stands. "I would," she says, briskly making her way down the platform. "Excellent," Gabor says, relinquishing his hold on the man's hair and taking a step back. "A curious mind is a strong mind." Andromache stands in front of the man for long seconds, waiting until he recovers enough to stare up at her, eyes flinty. Something changes in his expression. Something new appears, different from the hostility he's shown so far. "My lady," Gabor offers her the dagger hilt first, but she shakes her head. Any limits? She asks lightly. He shrugs. For you? None, he says with a charming smile. Yusuf wants to punch him in his smarmy face. Andromache doesn't hesitate. She reaches out, braces her arms, and snaps the man's neck. Yusuf jerks in surprise. He thought she was stalling, maybe, or only going to test his healing close up in some small way, not kill him. He almost calls out in protest, but he is far too late, and he can't afford to undermine her now. The man's body topples backwards, falling heavily against Gabor. Impressive, Gabor marvels, even as he staggers against the sudden weight, giving Andromache an appraising look. Straight for the kill. She doesn't answer, just waits. A moment later, there's a grinding noise as the man's neck moves back into position. Gabor shoves him upright the moment he starts breathing again. He lives, he cries, and the table erupts into spontaneous applause. He lives, Yusuf echoes beneath the noise. He isn't sure if he's grateful or not. Andromache nods to herself and returns to the table, holding an entire conversation with Quinn, consisting only of facial expressions and tiny hand movements. Yusuf watches the man watch her go, his face strangely blank. Then Gabor starts speaking again, and the man's attention snaps back, his face twisting once again into a snarl, or as much of one as he can manage around the muzzle. I will not drag this exhibition on today, Gabor says regretfully, to small noises of disappointment from the audience. I want him at his best for the festival, and the healing seems to wear him out after a while. He wipes his dagger off on the man's back and slips it back into its sheath. We want him up to show standards. He nods at the guards. They haul the man to his feet, catching him when he slips in the blood that has pooled on the floor. He struggles as they drag him back to the doorway, trying to kick when they come too close. He's making that noise again, almost a growl. It's hard to watch. It's hard to look away. What do you feed him? He could stand to gain some weight, Quinn remarks leadingly, her voice wavering only slightly. Watching with her, as the man stumbles out of the room, Yusuf's chest is tight. Gabor starts to make his way back to the table. Do you know, he says cheerfully, he can still die of starvation? Somehow he doesn't heal from that. Yusuf closes his eyes wearily. This just gets worse and worse. The other guests aren't even paying attention anymore, casually recounting the horror they just witnessed, like they're used to this sort of show. How do you know? Andromache asks, even though the answer is obvious. Gabor shrugs easily, settling back into his chair. I forgot about him for a month or two a little while back. I have him tucked away in the darkest little hole of the cellar, you see, and I suppose I lost interest in him for a time, so... Out of sight, out of mind. He takes a sip of wine, as Yusuf imagines drowning him in it. When I thought of him again, he was still alive, mostly. It did take some time and a few deaths to get him back into fighting shape, unfortunately. He frowns in recollection, leaning forward as though looking for sympathy. I had to pay a guard triple to hand-feed him at first. But in the end, my guard only lost half a finger, and I got my toy back, so it all worked out. Yusuf grunts and takes a long drink of water to avoid responding. He needs his wits about him, and he needs to not lunge across the table to strangle this disgusting little man here and now. There are too many guards around to risk it. So are you fattening him up, then, for the festival? Quinn asks, somehow managing to sound amused. Gabor toasts her with his goblet. Exactly, my lady, and then he will make an excellent sacrifice. He pauses to drink more wine, eyes flicking from Quinn to Yusuf. If you are interested in playing with him, I would be happy to oblige. I only ask that you wait for anything strenuous until after the festival. Yusuf stretches his mouth into the approximation of a smile. I would appreciate that opportunity, he makes himself say. It is very generous of you. Then, because Yusuf is a glutton for punishment, he asks, Does strenuous mean death? Gabor takes the question in stride. Death, disembowelment, disfigurement, he agrees. No cutting anything off. It does grow back, but it takes time and evidently energy. Have you ever cut off his head? Andromache asked pleasantly. Yusuf's eyes flicked nervously to the handle of her axe.
No, I have not yet dared to risk that, Gabor says with a sigh.
I started small, you know, toes, fingers, and earlobe. I saw him grow it all back without a scratch, so I worked my way up to a whole ear, entire limbs, his... He breaks off with a cough and an apologetic twist of his mouth. Well, I forget I am in polite company. His dick? Quinn asks, saccharine sweet. Gabor sputters on his next sip, but he laughs it off. Perhaps not such polite company, then. Yes, that is what I meant. I don't know that I'll ever tire of his reaction, and at least it gets some use this way. What do you mean? Yusuf grits out, aiming for mildly curious and likely hitting painfully strained. Is there no end to this man's depravity? I've never been able to get him to use it, Gabor says, as though it's a normal thing to say. He looks apologetic, glancing to Andromache and Quinn. After the festival, you may have full use of him, but I am afraid he will not be able to... please the ladies as much as he may use, sir. He frowns into his cup. The muzzle is an unfortunate necessity. The beast will bite if given the chance, so his mouth is somewhat unavailable as well. The world goes fuzzy as Gabor's meaning sinks in. The feeling is gone from Yusuf's fingertips, and he hears the voices around him as though they are from another room entirely. Unavailable, he thinks. Such a polite word. He clings to this state of detachment, all too aware of the disgust boiling beneath the surface and threatening to explode. He must stay calm. He must not react. By the time words start making sense again instead of passing straight through his ears and bypassing his brain, Yusuf has missed part of the conversation. It's just as well. The more Gabor talks, the more Yusuf wants to kill him, and he can't yet. I even threw in a girl for him once or twice, left him unchained and everything, Gabor is saying, gesturing with his goblet wildly enough to spill. I was hoping to get him going and then train him up to do it on command. Could make for a good show, don't you think? Very animalistic. But he never touched them. It was the damnedest thing. Gabor winks at them over the rim of his cup. Perhaps he only likes brunettes. Yusuf makes a noise that might pass for a laugh. Quinn and Andromache remain dead silent. Yusuf can't look at them. If he looks and sees the same stunned horror he is feeling, he may not be able to control his reaction. Gabor looks between the three of them for a moment out of words and lacking his typical smile. He opens his mouth and closes it once before saying, "Well, I should not keep you. You must be weary from the road." "Yes," Quinn agrees curtly. After a short inhale, her shoulders loosen and she smiles. "We would love to attend your festival if you do not mind hosting us for that long." Gabor's smile reappears as he snaps his fingers expectantly. "I will have someone show you to rooms where you are welcome to stay. Please, my home is yours." As the three of them rise to follow the servant who stepped forward, Gabor leans in. "Oh, and if you should be interested in a visit to my beast, just ask a guard to escort you. They know the rules." Yusuf offers a nod in return, even though he suspects a bow would be more proper. "Thank you," he manages, drawing on his merchant's experience of dealing with impossible customers. "Good night." Gabor waves them off and turns back to his other guests. Before he turns to follow the servant, Yusuf takes great pleasure in picturing his scimitar through the lord's back.